I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Big Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, August the 18th, and Analytics Week, or Nerd Week, really just Season Preview Week, as we call it, continues on. On this episode, we're going to talk about the AFC North and the NFC North in the feed. Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus talks about the AFC and NFC East, and we stick at the Pro Football Focus theme. Sorry, I botched Pro Football Focus. Steve Palazzo. Steve, what's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. You can actually make it easy. We've officially changed to just PFF.
Oh, yeah. That's true, because y'all actually – did we talk about the story? Did you guys have to go, like, take a bag of cash to meet somebody and get PFF.com?
I believe we did. So you can just go by PFF. You don't have to spell it out or anything. So keep it nice and easy.
That's good branding by y'all. I like it. It's smart.
Yeah, opens up maybe for other sports, Will. You know, other sports grading coming down the pipe here. So
really?
Keep an eye out for some stuff.
Can you tease that out a little bit more? I'm just curious. Is it?
I don't want to give too much away, but it's soccer, so there'll be some soccer stuff coming down the road here. Yeah,
I was going to guess either baseball because of your background as a former pitcher, or potentially basketball. Given you and Sam are like the hoop, but I was telling Sam yesterday. You know, the last time I saw you guys was in Miami for the Super Bowl. And we were talking about the basket, I would call it a blogger basketball tournament, like NFL writer basketball tournament. And then, you know, a month later, the world ended. So
yeah, the pre-COVID, we were going to have a massive basketball tournament at the combine, and, you know, not a good idea.
Now there's no combine.
Right? No, there's no combine. There's not anything. So
that's right. You can follow Steve at PFF _Steve. A senior analyst at PFF and host of the PFF NFL podcast. I do like PFF is much easier than
it is. Yeah.
That makes your life a lot easier.
Certainly does.
Yeah. Except when you have to explain it to idiots who didn't get the message the first time.
It's our fault for not messaging it properly. Just call us PFF, you know?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the website now too. Okay. Let's go to the AFC North. We'll start there. I think the top team in the division, the Baltimore Ravens. We talked about this yesterday with Sam, and you know, we're discussing the Bills, and people are going to get mad at me, I'm sure. But my only hold up on the Ravens and betting they're over and taking them to win the division is Lamar Jackson's vaccination status. Like, that's really the only thing that scares me off about the Ravens. I feel like they've got a fairly complete team. I love J.K. Dobbins. I like their addition to on the outside at wide receiver. The health issues are certainly a concern. I guess that's the other possible concern. And I think they'll manufacture enough on defense. Where do you stand on the Ravens? 10.5 wins over -1. Whoa, juiced up -145 now.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably lean over, but I think my hesitancy would be more the strength of the division. I really think this division could be right there behind. The NFC West probably looks, you know, on paper to be the best. You've got four legit competitive teams there. But the Browns are legit. The Bengals should be better. And even though we're calling for the Steelers to be worse because, you know, their weaknesses on the offensive line and maybe in the secondary could be glaring, I do think the AFC North ends up pretty competitive. I agree with the Ravens as the best team, but again, I think it's close between them and the Browns. So I guess my question is, do they have enough answers from a pass game standpoint? Can they win games where the pass game is the focal point? And I think that's the biggest question for the Ravens this year.
Yeah. One of the things that bugs me a little bit about the Ravens from last year, and I realize that Lamar Jackson wasn't as good in 2020 as he was in 2019, but there was just going to be some regression. It's just like with Patrick Mahomes from 2018 to 2019. Mahomes wasn't worse. In fact, he was probably better as a passer, but he did regress statistically. That's just sort of how this works when you have like a 9% touchdown percentage. Do you think what does the data show from y'all's perspective about Lamar's progression? Is there another level that he can take? How do you see him moving forward just as a pure passer?
By the way, if you're worried about him, he's not going to test positive again. If anything, he's had it twice. He just had it. The chances of him getting it with the next 3 to 4 months are actually minuscule based off the data. So
No, my concern is that he will have a close contact and be forced because of the protocol to have to miss time. That's my only concern.
Oh, okay. Based off the protocol is more than anything. Yeah,
again, this is not like I say this every show, if you like, but this is not a vaccination stance. This is a financial stance.
I've been in an NFL building within the last couple of weeks. It's intense as far as how they're treating things. But I would say Lamar,
NFL building. Assuming you can't tell us which NFL building.
I cannot tell you. It's one of the 32. So Lamar, I think what you said though, like the regression last year. I mean, remember that they had games where he'd go like 15 for 19 with 4 or 5 touchdowns. I mean, that level of efficiency that they had in 2019 was just absurd. So I do think, and he had a touchdown on like 7 or 8% of his passes. That regression was obvious. And I think, where Lamar can take a step forward again is those must pass situations. The thing we always said about him coming out of Louisville, he's still not the most accurate quarterback in the world. He has improved in that area, but because of his rushing ability and because of the way the Ravens have tapped into that, the fact that he is part of the design running game. So it's like running Uber play action, right? You've got 2 defenders moving on any given play or more defenders moving. That creates more open throws. So you don't have to be pristine as a passer, but there are times you got to convert 3rd and 7 and 3rd and 8. So I think that's where Lamar can take a step forward. And those are also the downs where things tend to, fluctuate a little bit. And it's not just Lamar. I think the most impressive thing about him is the fact that if you look at his playmakers, the stuff that we usually use as excuses for quarterbacks who don't produce, it's not like the Ravens have trotted out the best group of pass catchers out there. They've got a good group of tight ends. They use them well, but having a legitimate, trio of receivers to throw to when needed will really help Lamar and help this passing offense, whether that's Marquise Brown not having to be the guy, but just being, or 2 or 3, if Sammy Watkins emerges and if Rashad Bateman gets healthy and becomes the guy. So I think it's a full team effort to just get the passing game to be a little bit more efficient and less reliance on the play action game.
Yeah, and the Marquise Brown thing too, that wide receiver class is tough because you have A.J. Brown, you have D.K. Metcalf, these guys you put up big seasons. And, we kill, rightly so, the Eagles for the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside pick and the Pats for, N'Keal Harry. The Ravens kind of get beat up for the Marquise Brown pick, but these guys are still going to their third years. It's a little early to just write them off as, this just isn't going to work out. But I do think Brown, to your point, needs to be – he almost needs to be more like the second guy who takes the top off. And then you have a true possession, chain mover. I don't know that they have that guy on the roster necessarily. I mean, Sammy Watkins, who somehow is only like 23.
like Matthew Stafford, they're the same age.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He and Marquise Brown are the same age. I think this team, that would be curious to see if he can get better in those, as you point out, Steve, pure passing situations. Defensively, Matthew Judon is a big loss. I still think they have enough because of that secondary and because of the bodies they have on that defensive line to be stout. Is it possible that this is the third best defense in the division now?
I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be okay. Judon as a loss, I don't think is massive just because of the way the Ravens play football. Certain teams rely on a 4-man rush and they need a guy that's going to win one-on-one all the time. And that's not the Ravens. They blitz right up there with the Steelers more than anybody else in the league, and they rely on their back seven to cover, right? They rely on their corners to play a lot of man coverage. They rely on Marlon Humphrey to move around and be just almost like Charles Woodson in his Packers years, kind of doing everything on the back end of that defense. So I think they'll stitch together the pass rush between Tyus Bowser, Pernell McPhee. They brought in Justin Houston, draft Odafe Oweh. So I do like the Ravens defense. You know, Calais Campbell was a nice addition last year. Brandon Williams back in the middle. So there's a lot of just good, solid players there. I need to see a better play from Patrick Queen, who was kind of all over the place as a rookie. He's got to tackle better, take on blocks better. But I think the Ravens, from a team building standpoint, do a lot of the same stuff we believe in at PFF, which is build from back to front, build the secondary. You're only as strong as your weakest link when it comes to the secondary. So you got to roll three or four deep at corner, and they have a chance to do that this year.
That's actually a great topic. I had forgotten that, and this is just how long life is in these segments. But that was the hot that was the topic du jour last offseason, right?
It was. Where
you guys rolled it out, and everybody melted down and freaked out about how now you got to build from the pass rush out. Do you feel like has success or failures from 2020, or further digging into the analytics? Have you feel like people have been swayed over to that argument a little bit more than before?
I mean, it's football, so everything's nothing's ever clear cut, right? I mean, because it's football, because we're talking, it's like blackjack. You're talking about if there's an advantage, it's 55%, it's not 90%. Right. But as far as last year, there were teams, I'm trying to look real quick over at PFF.com, the best pass rushing team. So the Eagles are like my prime example. The Eagles have had a top five pass rush every year since 2016. The one year they won the Super Bowl, all of a sudden their coverage unit jumped up to top three. So the Eagles have always rushed the passer well. They've had eight, they've been rolling eight deep, and they're a four-man rush type of team. They're always good there, but their success has always been dependent on what happens in the secondary. So that's generally one example that I like to use. The Niners were a team last year, which probably kind of got lost a little bit, but they still had one of the most efficient defenses in the league, even while losing Nick Bosa, even while losing DeForest Buckner and not really replacing them. They had the number three coverage unit by our numbers last year. So, and they had a very good defense. They just, their offense was atrocious. So I do think overall, I think the theory holds true, but there are certainly outliers all along the way too.
Yeah. I mean, like you've got to have, you can build from the secondary, but if you don't build it right, it won't matter.
They are complementary pieces either. I mean, pass rush and coverage are complementary pieces. I think the main point is when you're watching a football game, when you see a quarterback get hit, you immediately assign credit in your head to the defensive line, right? And you don't, because you don't necessarily see, well, if the quarterback doesn't go to his first or second read, that might only take 2.5 seconds, right? But it's getting away from that first or second read that allowed the pass rush to get there. So it's probably more complementary than people think, where people used to think, oh, just build in the trenches and it'll protect everybody else. It's probably more complementary than even our perception through the years.
Yeah, I always think back to the, I guess it's 2011 Giants when they won that Super Bowl, and they had, this group of guys on the back end who were fine, but not, or maybe it was 2011 Giants, but they had this great pass rush that beefed up the secondary, but you can do it the other way around. And right. That's sort of what Baltimore does. And it's worked out fine for them. They got a great set of dudes on the back end there with Marlon Humphrey and friend of the podcast, Marcus Peters.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The Browns, you mentioned the Browns. I mean, this is I'm having trouble with the Browns because I look at the roster and everything about this team makes me want to be in on them. I mean, the offensive line is stacked. I know you guys were high on Baker Mayfield coming into the draft. I Baker was my number one quarterback in that class as well. Nick Chubb is maybe my favorite running back in all of football. I think Odell Beckham is a buy low in fantasy, and they added all the necessary pieces on defense. Clowney a little bit overhyped probably, but can certainly help them in areas that they need help on. And they got young players who could be ascending. The only reason, Steve, I'm not in on the Browns is because they're the Browns and they're 16-1 to win the Super Bowl. And that seems crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you balance that, right? I don't know how you balance the history with, Andrew Berry's the GM now and making a lot of smart moves. They have a very smart front office. And I think it shows in pretty much every move they make. And then Kevin Stefanski came in last year and in any other first year coach, if you trend in the right direction, you should have confidence in that guy, right? Sean McVay came in and was like a godsend for the Rams, and nobody was doubting him after year one just because there wasn't a Rams history. So not saying Kevin Stefanski deserves that type of credit, but in most non-Browns situations, you would say, well, the front office, the roster, the coach, it's all in line, right? I mean, I think my biggest hesitancy is still Baker Mayfield, right? As much as I did love him coming out, and as much as he did, I was almost out on him will. I mean, I was almost out after week seven. He played against the Steelers. I think it was the week seven, week six or seven game.
Awful.
It was so bad. He's just staring down his first read and pick six to make a Fitzpatrick in the beginning of the year.
They yanked him for Case Keenum and made it seem like a protection injury thing.
There was a point where Case Keenum looked like he might have been a better option just because Baker was not seeing the field. He wasn't thrown with touch. I mean, there was just so much where it was like, man, he is not progressing. And then all of a sudden OBJ gets hurt and Baker Mayfield's better. I mean, and I'm not saying that they're connected necessarily, but it is weird, right? And in 2019, when the whole offense was just a disaster, it was Baker and OBJ just not being on the same page. There was probably two or three times Odell Beckham's making that in cut. He's going to run the dig route, and then he kind of straightens it out, and they're not on the same page. It happened over and over and over again. It was this weird chemistry thing, and I don't know how much you chalk it up to Freddie Kitchens and whatever, but clearly Baker's been better without Odell Beckham. But I'm with you. I mean, I think part of that was just Baker's progression. It was the system playing off that running game. And Odell Beckham with Jarvis Landry, with Rashard Higgins, and pushing those guys, taking pressure off their plate, should make everything better. But honestly, it's just Baker's consistency to me. Yeah. Put that full season together, let me buy in, and I'll feel much better about the Browns going forward.
Yeah, and that, look, I applaud Baker for not pounding the table. Like, I need a contract. You know, we're trying to get paid. Yeah. Like, dude's doing the smart thing. You know, go out there and play well. I sort of wonder, though, the one thing about, you know, when you, the problem with this team, and this is maybe more of a fantasy question or from a betting perspective, like if you wanted to bet on Baker Mayfield to win MVP, I don't hate the idea because I think he could have a really good season and there's some decent, you know, if it's like 35-1 or something like that. But if you go and look at Kevin Stefanski when he's OC in Minnesota, and then last year, you know, with the Browns, they're just not going to throw it enough for him to put up those numbers, right? And is that something? I mean, I don't know how much, and I'm not asking you if you guys talked to the Browns, but I am curious because to me, it looks very clearly like he has a set number, and I think it's like 19 for rushing attempts for Nick Chubb. Like he just does, he believes there's a certain number where you're efficient, more efficient. And then I think with Baker too, he wants to limit the number of passing plays and the number of times that Baker's forced to drop back and make a decision.
Yeah. So I bet on Baker to win MVP in his second season. So I was way off. That was when he was terrible. So I don't mind the bet, but here's what I thought. A year ago, here's what I was saying. When Kevin Stefanski comes in and you run that play action attack and you roll Baker out and all that stuff, if Baker drops back 35 times in a game, how many of those are going to be protected, so to speak? You got a few screens, you have a few easy rollouts, you know. So I think that's what Stefanski brought was just the gimme plays, so that it's not Baker Mayfield dropping back and making plays on third and long the entire time. There might be 15 plays where he's got to, you know, ball out, or 20 plays where he's really going to ball out. So I think your point is right, because they do have, I think, the best offensive line, the best run blocking offensive line. Two-headed, you know, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the backfield. And the entire Shanahan tree, as much as we always talk at PFF, pass, pass, pass. If you are efficient on the ground and you do tie it to play action and all that stuff, you can run an efficient offense, as the Browns have and as, you know, the Shanahan tree generally does. So I'm kind of with you. I don't know if the volume is going to be there. But I do think for Baker's efficiency, this system has worked really well because they're just taking a few of those plays out of his hands, you know, in a given game.
So defensively, Cleveland, again, as I point out, like, I like their additions, you know, I mean, I don't want to get too overhyped. Clowney, I think, is a better player than the people who hate him believe, right? And he doesn't need to be this 40-sack guy, 20-sack guy. He's just going to be a great defender against a run. How do you guys look at this defense in terms of, is there anything that could indicate maybe they take a leap forward and become an elite defense?
Yeah, I think just all of the turnover that they've had, all the new players, the same thing I'll say about the Ravens. I think the Browns have built this team the right way. You know, they invested heavily in the secondary, bringing in John Johnson, who's been, you know, by PFF grades above 80 in his three full seasons, which is fantastic. Troy Hill comes in after his really nice season last year with the Rams. He can play the slot, can play outside. And I love that the Browns went in the first round and just drafted Greg Newsom and said, we're going to take another corner, because, again, you literally cannot have too many corners in today's NFL. You don't. It's not a two-person position. It's like a four- or five-person position, realistically. And they have Greedy Williams, sitting there who we really don't know what he is at this point. He's only played one full season. And they have Grant Delpit, even though he's hurt again. You know, we don't know what he is at safety. So I just love that the Browns didn't go in and say, well, we'll let Greedy Williams compete for the job. They said, no, we're going to get Greg Newsome. We're going to attack the secondary with volume because you need that to stop opposing offenses in today's NFL. So I think the secondary is fantastic. They add in Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who's already was flying around the field in the first week of preseason. So a nice hybrid linebacker. And then the Clowney thing is interesting because when people thought he was as good as Khalil Mack or this elite pass rusher, and we were the ones saying, wait, he's the 8-sack guy. Like, that's what he is. Yeah. He pass rushes at that level. And then he has 2 years where he only sacked the quarterback 3 times, and then last year, 0. And it's like, okay, well, he's better than that. He's better than a 3-sack guy or a 0-sack guy. So, you know, sacks are certainly – they're dependent on how good you are, but also what's around you. I mean, if Jadeveon Clowney has 8 sacks this year, playing at the same level as he did the last 2 years, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, just because he's got Miles Garrett, Malik Jackson there. So I think the Browns, again, smart moves, add in some veterans along that defensive line, and they should be much better defensively.
Agreed completely. The Steelers are the popular fade in the NFL. Their over-under is 8.5. They are 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. It has to have been since pre-2004 for them to be 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. It is crazy. Are you aboard the fade Big Ben bandwagon, or do you think there's a little bounce back left in this newly slimmed out Roethlisberger?
I'm in the fade category, but I also try to paint a picture of what could happen, right? So again, last year at this time, it was like the Packers. Think about the Packers offseason last year. They didn't draft anybody that could help the team immediately, and they probably pissed off Aaron Rodgers, and it just didn't feel good. And then they went out and Aaron Rodgers balled out because he's Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, Big Ben is still Big Ben, right? He still has the ability to turn back the clock, make a few, you know, big time throws down the field. So that's why I think it's really Chase Claypool that is the biggest factor. I think the Steelers, by our rankings, number 31 offensive line on paper heading into the season, I think it's going to be a challenge. But if they do run more play action like they have during the preseason here with Matt Canada at offensive coordinator, if they do run more motion, the things that Big Ben hates, and Chase Claypool becomes a star, I feel like he can offset everything else. Claypool, Deontay Johnson, Juju as a number 3, it is a good group of playmakers. And all you need is Big Ben, who looked bad last year for the majority of the season. His stats were way better than he actually played. Hit a few of those downfield plays. If Claypool balls out, I think it offsets a lot of these bad feelings of the offensive line and drafting a running back in the first round and all these moves that make it feel like the Steelers got worse this offseason, which I think they did. But I feel like they could offset it if Big Ben just plays better than he did last year, which is possible.
Yeah, and I think, too, there's a chance that because whenever the Steelers do this, they make Ben uncomfortable. Like when they did it, and I think it was 2012, where they hired Todd Haley and fired Bruce Arians retired. Yeah. It's almost like just making Ben uncomfortable in a way that will force him to play. He'll play better because he's uncomfortable. I think that's sort of what you're banking on. That offensive
he's a competitor, right? He's a competitor like a Rodgers or a Brady, and they have a history of success. And sometimes that negative motivation kind of works for them. Yeah,
absolutely. The Steelers fans and Steelers fans in my life, the ones that I talk to, it's like Ryan Wilson's a Steelers fan. Brian DiArdo and Ryan Wilson are the two that have said this. And I just don't, they're like, the offensive line's improved from last year. I'm like, maybe it is, but it's still really bad, right?
So it depends on how you view it, right? It's a weird way to look at it. If they brought the same offensive line back from last year, even though they didn't play great, I would have more confidence in that unit than I do the current unit right now because Ali Villanueva at left tackle and Marquise Pouncey at center and David DeCastro at right guard, they did not play well. They all kind of took steps back last year, especially DeCastro and Villanueva, but they have a history of playing better than that. So you would bank on
that. They're known commodities, right?
They are. So even if they had a bad day, they had our number 31 graded run blocking unit last year. So I would look at that and say, they'll be better this year. They weren't great last year, but they should be better because they have a track record. There's no track record for a core four at left tackle. Zach Banner's played hundreds of snaps in the NFL in 4 years. Trey Turner's coming off his worst season.
And he's on his third team. I mean, like.
Right. I mean, so there's nothing on the roster that says that they will be better other than, you know, hope, right? Because it's August and we all have hope. Now, in the preseason, Dan Moore's a rookie who's played pretty well. Kendrick Green, the other rookies, you know, played okay. If those guys come out and exceed expectations, maybe. But, yeah, there's nothing on paper that says, yeah, this line's going to be better than they were last year.
Yeah. Defensively, there's been some I think there was some talk about Devin Bush not. They had Joe Schobert wearing the green dot and captaining the defense. That's kind of a red flag for me. And as much as I love TJ Watt, I do wonder how he's going to be without, you know, like it's nice having Bud Dupree there and he's gone now. And like, it feels like there's some spots where this defense could take a step back. And if that happens, this team is in trouble.
Yeah, so I'm less worried about the pass rush because I think we've always been on the boat that other than 2019, Bud Dupree's really been overrated. You know, I think he's been more of a product of the blitzing system and TJ Watt, really. Melvin Ingram, Alex Highsmith, I think they'll be fine there. Devin Bush is the interesting one, right? Because, again, you talk about Steelers fans. I mean, they think he's Dick Butkus over there. So it's tough because he's played pretty well. He's been okay. There's a lot of pressure on Steelers linebackers. They blitz a ton. So you're covering an ocean sometimes. And he's got the speed and all that stuff. But yeah, I think having Bush and Schobert next to each other should certainly help. I'm really worried about the secondary. So if I'm talking up the Ravens and talking up the Browns for their potential cornerback depth, I have to talk down the Steelers because they lose Steven Nelson, who was pretty good last year. Cameron Sutton was pretty good too. But again, you want to have three guys there. So who's the number three? Who's the real starter on the outside when Sutton moves into the slot? And Joe Hayden, you know, he's getting older and he's just been good, solid, okay the last couple of years. So, you know, the Steelers are primed to protect those guys on the back end. I just think the secondary is going to be a much bigger weakness than it has been the last 2 years.
Well, look, if their secondary is bad and the offensive line is bad, then the fade is probably the smart move. But I do like your idea, Steve, of, you know, you got to find the path. Because there is a path. All these teams, well, most of these teams have a path to success. Maybe a team like the Bengals, for instance, probably no path to a Super Bowl victory.
Right.
What in your mind constitutes a good season for Cincinnati? I mean, 7 wins and Joe Burrow isn't destroyed. And maybe more importantly, has the Penei Sewell Jamar Chase argument been solved yet?
Oh, it'll never be solved. I mean, honestly, the pressure's on Jackson Carmen, who's rolling with the third string, the second round guard now from the Bengals, right? I mean, part of I feel like PFF had a big hand in pushing the wide receiver over tackle narrative. And even despite that, I think it was a legit toss up. I think you're okay if you went Penei Sewell or Jamar Chase. I think the reason you could go Jamar Chase is the same way I was saying, well, the coverage versus pass rush debate. You can protect your quarterback by having receivers who get open. It's not just the offensive line's job. I know that Burrow got hurt last year on a block that should have been made. But you protect the quarterback by having receivers who get open quickly. And if you have Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd, that should help a little bit. Either way, the Bengals do have plenty of questions on the offensive line. And success this year, yeah, Joe Burrow looks like a future star and stays in one piece. And then you say, okay, how do we build upon next year? And then, you know, Zach Taylor, I think, is really under the gun here, right? I mean, what is he as a head coach? How does he progress this year?
Friend of Sean McVay.
Yeah, friend of Sean. By the way, I did find out, so you might be seeing me hired soon, my chiropractor's wife's best friend's husband, good friends with Sean McVay.
Well,
so I could be joining my friend Zach Robinson.
Coach. I guess Sean McDermott's not getting fired. You're the next who's getting fired first. I actually think the bet is no coach fired in season. Maybe you'll be the next Bengals coach, though.
I could be. I'm 12 minutes away from the stadium here, so we can make that happen.
Are you really only 12 minutes away?
Oh, yeah. I'm right outside.
Do you ever run into Jim Breach around there?
No, I don't think so.
You know what I'm talking about, Jim Breach, right?
I don't.
Oh, so John's dad is the old Bengals kicker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's actually a great dude. Anyway.
I don't know, but I'm close. I'm close to the stadium here.
Nice, very nice. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, the NFC North. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, so everything starts and ends, of course, in the NFC North with Aaron Rodgers. I was actually able to get down, sprinkle down some. I got Packers 40-1 to win the Super Bowl +225 to win the NFC North when it looked like that. You remember that very bizarre 24 hours where Mike Florio wouldn't stop writing about how the sports books were taking down Packers odds? And in reality, what happened is he screwed everybody, because if they left him up, he could have pounced on him when Rodgers announced he was coming back.
Yeah, right.
You know, do you, this is over under 10.5 for the Packers feels kind of like a slam dunk to me. I don't see what I'm missing on the Packers over.
Yeah, they should be good. I think the thing that you would, I would hit the over, but the thing you would look at is, okay, Aaron Rodgers, here's what analytics has done to me, Will. Instead of taking the nice story and said, oh, he played great last year, he'll continue it, I actually go the other way and say, wow, this guy was so good, it's got to get worse, right? And I that's like, it's changed, I think, the way we tell stories, where you used to think, well, young quarterbacks, they'll get better every year. And instead, we're like, wait, let's see if they can replicate this. Let's use some common sense here. So the common sense play would say, well, Aaron Rodgers was the highest graded quarterback by PFF standards last year and by every other measure. Sure. Davante Adams was the best receiver by every measure. Jair Alexander was the best corner by our measure. Can they replicate that? They're all good. They're all awesome. But can they play at that level? Because I think they elevated the rest of the roster, because it's three elite positions all playing at the top of their respective position, right? So if there's any sort of slippage there, you need other receivers to step up. You need cornerback two is still a massive question mark for the Packers, even though they bring back Kevin King, who's just never played football well. and so that would be my hesitation. I'm not going to hesitate. I would take the Packers over. I still think Aaron Rodgers is great and that they'll be fine. But can they play at that elite level with those superstars? I think that's a big question.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers has – so if you take 2008 – When he became the starter in Green Bay through 2019, he completed 64.6% of his passes, averaged on a 16-game basis 4,287 yards and 33 touchdowns. So, I mean, his completion percentage, I mean, that's not a small sample size, and this guy's been doing it, you know, with only two systems, same sort of similar personnel, you know, Adams, Jordy Nelson, whatever it is. I mean, last year's the yardage is fine, but the touchdown passes, the 48 touchdown passes, 9.1% of his passes. We just talked about Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. That's going to come down. Not going to happen again.
And look, Rodgers' career, of course, he's first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best of all time, all of that. But I think I can off the top of my head say, okay, 2020, the stretch in 2016, most of 2014, and probably 2010 into 11.
Yep.
Those stretches of play were like otherworldly. It was like, okay, Rodgers is playing like the best in the world. Which is great. He deserves credit for that. But everything around it, from 17 to 19, there was debates. Is he regressing? The production's not as high. You know, is he a top 5 quarterback? Is he top 6 or 7? You know, so that could happen again. And
the Packers, it happened because the Packers drafted Jordan Love. I mean, like they were worried that he was slipping.
So it's not a slam dunk that Rodgers plays at that elite level, because like I'm saying, since 2011, it's kind of come and gone at times. So to me, that would be the biggest question for the Packers. Plus, the offensive line, I think, has more question marks than they've had in the past. You know, right tackle, if Billy Turner is scheduled to be the right tackle there, and, you know, that's Josh Myers at center, who they drafted, I think the line's a bit of a question mark compared to what it's been in the past.
I mean, Corey Linsley's been starting at center basically since 2014. I mean, this, you know, Aaron Rodgers will be fine. He'll put up good numbers. He'll be good. But, you know, those are a subtle adjustment. Like, you're changing. You know, they know the scheme well enough, but you have a new center coming in. I mean, that's, to me, the center is always an underrated aspect of what these players have to, you know, these quarterbacks have to deal with, even a veteran guy. You know, if it's a rookie, you're worried about it for sure. But I think there are enough questions to be asked about Rodgers. Does the defense, Was the defense good? I can never tell if the Packers defense is good. I mean, I know Jair Alexander's good. And I think Darius Smith is good, but I don't feel like the Packers defense is ever great.
I think they're top heavy. You know, I think it's Jair Alexander and Adrian Amos were, you know, good on the back end. I mentioned Kevin King, you know, they drafted Eric Stokes. That's the weak link system at play, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
When the Bucs attack Kevin King in the NFC Championship, Mike Evans has a long touchdown, Scotty Miller has the long touchdown. It doesn't matter that you have Jair on one side. It doesn't even matter that you have Adrian Amos at safety. It doesn't matter that you have two of the top five at their respective positions if the one guy is bottom five at his position, right? So that's why depth is so crucial there, and I think that's where the Packers could struggle, right?
Yeah.
The tricky part too is Brandon Staley scheme potentially coming in, you know, the new, you know, play a little quarters and play a little softer and, you know, prevent the deep passes. We'll see if that becomes a trend because the Packers, you know, might be going that way defensively.
Interesting. And that, so in other words, we like the Packers, but you don't love the Packers.
Right. I mean, coming off of last year, they were so good last year. I don't think they'll be as good, and it'll be a couple bounces here and there that determine if they win 13 or if they win 11 or 10 or whatever that number is. I'd go over that on the Packers
for sure. Vikings are at 9, and Vegas considers them to be the biggest challengers in the division. I think there's a case too where last year was the first time you ever have really seen a Mike Zimmer defense suck, and they completely redid the whole thing. Is there any way to look at changes and historical data and stuff and figure out if a bounce back is coming for a defense like that?
My buddy Sam, you know, actually told me the other day, he looked it up. He said they were actually the second most efficient defense on third down, which shows how bad they were on first and second down. So it was still Zimmer on third down, but first and second down was a disaster. The pass rush was horrible. So we talk about how much they have to play off each other. They were bottom one or two in our pass rush grades. Just having Danelle Hunter back should help that quite a bit, or having a Dalvin Tomlinson in the middle or a Sheldon Richardson coming back. So I think the Vikings will be better. I also look at it from this big picture view of they just drafted 15 times last year. I think it was 10 or 11 times this year. A lot of times you just get that influx of youth and it's just, you're going to hit on some players and there are going to be some guys that emerge. So I think the Vikings are trending in the right direction. They still come back to their offensive line. They haven't had that thing solved in a while. So if Christian Darrisaw comes back healthy and can play left tackle, or if Wyatt Davis, who they got in the third round, can step in and play left guard, I think that would be huge for them.
Yeah, it feels like they've been trying to solve it. I think there's maybe a chance. I was suggesting this the other day, and I kind of got shot down when I threw it out to some people. But it was like, is there a chance the Vikings offensive line breaks out? Because, you know, but Brian Hill is a 2018 second rounder. Garrett Bradbury, first rounder, 2019. They draft Ezra Cleveland. You mentioned Darrisaw, who they need to get back there. I mean, if all those guys, like, that's asking a lot, that they would just all take a step forward. But if they all sort of gelled, you know, maybe Dalvin Cook leads the league. You know, maybe Dalvin Cook has a 1,500 rushing yard season. Again, people laughed at me when I suggested it, so feel free to laugh.
It's not crazy because, look, offensive linemen, our numbers point to this. They break out in year three or four. That's, you know, Bradbury's heading into year three, and Ezra Cleveland's heading into year two. But the point is, a lot of guys go from not being, like, Eric Fisher is the classic example. Donovan Smith. You know, these were guys who were like, LOL, look at that guy early in their career. And then they get better. Eric Flowers has turned into like a reasonable guard. I mean, he was the butt of every Twitter joke for
Garrett
a while.
Garrett
Bowles turned into a pretty good player. Plus, they stopped calling holding last year, so that helped him quite a bit. But there are linemen who get better in year three or four. And look, I don't want to overrate process for the draft and all that stuff. I thought it was great process what the Vikings did, trading down in the first round. They got Christian Darrisaw and Kellen Mond and Wyatt Davis essentially for that one draft pick. And I think, you know, that from a process standpoint, they may have found two offensive line starters for the price of one, which was Elijah Vera Tucker in the draft. So I think those moves will start to pay off for the Vikings.
Yeah, I would take the Vikings over, again, as I mentioned with Lamar, this, you know, Kirk Cousins stand on the refusal to get vaccinated. If I die, I die. Has me a little concerned about taking that over, but I would lean towards that over. The Bears, they draft Justin Fields, they trade up and get him. They're over under 7.5. How early do you think we see Justin Fields based on the way, and what are your thoughts on, as Pete Prisco likes to say, play the kid, let the kid play?
I don't think there's a right answer. You know, Pete, there's just a history of both things working, right? And I think whatever you decide, you go for it. And I don't think Matt Nagy went out there and said, just because I was part of the Mahomes deal, that it's going to be 16 games. Oh, he's not going to play for 16 games. We'll see him in week 17 because that's what Mahomes did. I think all he's saying is when Justin Fields is ready, he's going to play. And it doesn't matter what Andy Dalton does. Now, again, Sam always yells back at me. He's like, well, the year Mahomes was there, Alex Smith balled out, led the league in passer rating and all this stuff, and the Chiefs were afraid to bench him because he was having a career year. I guess if that happened with Andy Dalton, maybe that pushes Fields back. But the Bears' goal is to do what's best by Justin Fields. That's their best bet. So if they think it's week 3 or week 15 or whatever it is, Justin Fields should be playing. So whenever he's ready, he'll play. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be excited about after his debut.
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly an interesting. I think what they're going to do is do exactly what they did with Glennon and Trubisky, which is act like they were going to play Glennon for the full year and then panic when they start losing games and go to Trubisky. And that's what's going to happen with Andy Dalton, is they're going to panic because they got a fairly soft schedule out of the start. But
you just can't panic, though. You can't make your decision based off Andy Dalton if you're smart. You do whatever's best for Fields. And if it's right, like Dalton balls out week one, but Fields is even better in practice, it's like, all right, it's Fields' time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is if you're benching Andy Dalton because he sucks and throwing Justin Fields out there before he's ready, that is the worst thing that you could do.
Yes, Justin Fields. Yes, agreed.
Do you think that this defense actually, obviously that's sort of been their calling card, but you look at this defense and it's not hard to kind of get excited about it, even though I guess they're going into this is their third defensive coordinator in like 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, in 2018, they were elite. They were really good. That was the year that they, you know, won the division and all that. But I think they've slowly gotten depleted on the back end, and there's still a question about, you know, who the top pass rusher is opposite Khalil Mack. You've got Robert Quinn there, who's just okay. So I think they'll be solid, but I don't think it's this fearsome Bears defense that they're accustomed to. I think a lot of that has to do with weather too, and all. I think that's why you have good defenses in cold weather cities. I think you get aided by that when you don't have to play in domes. That's a whole different story, but. I have questions about the secondary and Jalen Johnson, Kendall Vildor, Duke Shelley, Desmond Trufant, Artie Burns. Like, those are all the dudes competing for those three corner spots. So I think that's a big question mark.
That is a big question mark. Do you are you then out on the Bears? Maybe I was sort of leaning towards it. 7.5 is so low. But
I'm not out on the Bears because I think from a high level view, if you look at what Matt Nagy has done, despite Mitchell Trubisky over the field, they've won games. They made the playoffs last year despite not having good quarterback play. I think Matt Nagy and maybe Ryan Pace too deserve credit for that. And maybe that goes, maybe it's more Matt Nagy, but
yeah, I think Matt Nagy might be a good coach. Bears fans hate him as a play caller. I don't think he's that bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're hamstrung by what you have. I mean, look, Justin Fields with his speed, he looked so fast in the debut, for whatever that's worth, in the Bears rolling him out a touch and him breaking from the pocket. I mean, he's going to be tough to defend, right? He does have to get rid of the ball quicker and make some better decisions and what have you, but that's going to open up the play calling. And if they just called 10 rollouts a game, it's going to stress the defense. The play calling is going to look a lot better when you have a better playmaker
there. Meanwhile, Andy Dalton folds like a cheap launch here under pressure. So, yeah. You know, good. But anyway, good luck with that decision, Matt Nagy. Is there any reason to consider taking the Lions over, which I think is 4.5? What is it? 4.5 or 5? Did they move it up to 5? It's 5.
Last time I saw it.
Over is minus 140. I mean, I get that Dan Campbell is fun and entertaining, and he's a great soundbite. I'm just not sure this team is going to be any good.
I think they're just in a rebuilding mode. I mean, it's just where they are. And I think, you know, they're building through the trenches, which sounds great on paper, but doesn't actually win you a ton of games if you're bad on the perimeter. It's just the nature of the NFL. So if they don't have one of their receivers, they would need, Breshad Perriman, where he flashed the first round ability a couple years ago. That needs to happen. Tyrell Williams has been a pretty good complimentary big threat. Amon-Ra St. Brown had a nice little debut. I mean, they would need those guys to play really well. And I think Jared Goff is just fascinating here because I do think he's a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he's been completely a product of Sean McVay. So for them to go over, you know, Jared Goff, it's tough to think of Jared Goff on a team that's going to win less than 5 games. That's the only thing. I think he's good enough. I mean, you're making a face here, but Jared Goff's a pretty good quarterback, right? You don't have a whole lot of
teams. He was going to be a top 5 quarterback for a while in 2018.
I mean, right. So how much of that you want to put on McVay and the scheme and whatever, hold that aside for a second. It's still tough to win less than five games in today's NFL if you have a solid quarterback, a top 20, a top 15 quarterback. It's tough to do. Now, I think the Lions are equipped to do it. I think they're completely in a rebuilding state here. But all Goff has to do is ball out for four, five, six games, and they could pull some off. So I would take the under for the Lions because of the rebuild. But I wouldn't be surprised if Goff just if Goff ruins their first overall pick aspirations because he's too good.
My biggest concern with the Lions actually isn't even Dan Campbell, but so Rod, I talked about this. This is like my big thing on this podcast for some reason with the Lions. Rod Wood, who's their president and CEO, was like involved in making roster moves last year. And they then go out and hire Chris Spielman, who hasn't had a job. He's been broadcasting for Fox Sports for 21 years.
Yeah.
And they bring him in, and I feel like Spielman is sort of the de facto general manager. I know Brad Holmes is the actual general manager, but it feels like Spielman and Rod Wood have this influence on the hiring of Dan Campbell, on the decision to, you know, let Stafford go, and really like all the roster moves and build through the trenches. And I'm just concerned that they're going to try and construct a team the way that Chris Spielman, who I believe was drafted in, what year was he drafted in? 1988. 88. Like he played for the Lions from 88 to 95. And they're trying to like build a team based on what Chris Spielman thinks a championship football team would look like. And that scares the hell out of me for,
I hear you.
Thinking about the Lions being good.
Yeah, I had the same take. I was like, man, Spielman and Dan Campbell. I said for a while, I was like, their first pick's going to be Micah Parsons. You know, they're just because a lot of times your first pick is as a regime, it's like, all right, this is the tone setter, and it's got to be the Mike linebacker. But look, I don't mind them building in the trenches because I don't see them winning for a couple years. And just going back to that point about offensive line development, if Penei Sewell starts to peak in year three and Alim McNeil and Levi Onwuzurike.
Alim McNeil is a stud, by the way.
I love it. Yeah, he's good. I mean, so it's okay now, but at some point they have to say, okay, it's a pass-first league. You win with depth at corner and with depth at wide receiver, and you win through the pass game. As long as they get there. But yeah, I kind of understand your concern about Spielman and Campbell as the guys.
Like, they're chewing on ribs. Like, yeah, we're drafted through the trenches, baby.
It's Spielman's commentary too. Every game that he was announcing, it was like, oh, you got to establish the run and this and that. So yeah. you could kind of sense that stuff.
I don't want to, I mean, he's an executive now, so I can say that. Like, I didn't like him as a broadcaster.
That's okay. He might be back there in a couple of years. You never know.
Yeah, and by the way, they don't have depth at wide receiver because they have Breshad Perriman, Tyrell Williams, and Quintez Cephas, which,
yeah,
you know, that's not entirely great.
It's right there. It's the worst unit in the league, probably, the Texans.
I do think Hockenson could have a monster year, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just volume-wise,
Think about the difference from last year. Marvin Jones was good. Kenny Golladay, when healthy, was great. And Danny Amendola is an excellent number three. It's night and day from what the Lions have been trotting out there the last couple of years.
Yeah. Don't take Lions over, kids. It's not good for your health. Or scary. Bankroll. That's right. All right, Steve. This is a blast, man. Thanks for taking the time. We ripped through both the Norths. Got some good insight into it. And get ready for football. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks, Will.
Hit it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.